This episode is brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Harness powerful crop solutions using technology derived from nature. Products from the Acceleron BioAg brand are bioenhancers, primarily containing live microbial organisms. The products help promote increased nutrient and water availability for better yield potential. Acceleron BioAg product offerings are available for canola, wheat, corn, soybean, pulses, and more. Visit AcceleronBioAg.ca for product information and to view BioAdvantage trial results from growers like you. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, we have a full show. Grain News editor Leanne Minogue highlights the global spread of clubroot. Barb Glenn spells out potential gopher trouble.
There's a product called aluminum phosphide fumigant, also lead poisoning, right?
Lisa Gunther brings us an interview from the recent Ag in Motion show. We hear about the potential for weakness in the Canadian dollar. And Ashley Robinson of Commodity News Service Canada brings us news on the markets. That's all on Between the Rows with this week's host, Ed White.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Today we're going to talk about gophers, club root, ag tech, currency crises, and the markets. But first, let's deal with the rodents. Many urbanites and children everywhere think ground squirrels are cute. Gainer the gopher encourages this feeling. But in some areas, they are a real problem for farmers, causing damage and dangers, and they need to be controlled. Strychnine has long been an effective control tool, allowing farmers to poison the varmints and suppress the problems they create. But its continued use in Alberta and Saskatchewan is looking doubtful. Barb Glenn, the Western Producers Livestock Editor and Lethbridge Reporter, joins us now to explain what's happening. Hello, Barb, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Ed.
So what's happening with strychnine?
Well, Health Canada has undertaken a review, which it does periodically for all pest management chemicals. And it has initially recommended that strychnine for control of ground squirrels no longer be used. And the primary rationale for that is that strychnine can cause collateral damage to birds and mammals that scavenge on the gophers that die from ingesting the strychnine. And other birds and animals might accidentally eat the bait. So that is the situation as far as Health Canada is concerned.
Now, what kind of animals? What are the secondary animals that can be accidentally taken out by this poison?
Well, birds of prey can be any animal that scavenges. So hawks, eagles, coyotes have been affected. Health Canada, in its commentary, specifically mentions some species at risk, such as swift foxes and even burrowing owls.
So how is this going over with farmers?
Well, some of them have called me, and they're telling me that strychnine is among the most, if not the most, effective way to solve a major problem with ground squirrels, a.k.a. gophers. And they tell me that if it's used properly, like if the bait is put into the holes rather than, you know, surface scattered, that it kills the gophers quickly and they die in their burrows, which would limit the potential for collateral damage.
And if strychnine is banned, what will farmers have to fall back upon?
There's still a few treatments. There's anticoagulants like warfarin, rat poison, as it's more commonly known. There's a product called aluminum phosphide fumigant, and there's a foam product, and, well, also lead poisoning, right? shooting them with a .22, which is commonly done as well.
And I understand in Manitoba that's already the case that strychnine is banned.
Yes, that's right. It's been banned for a few years in Manitoba. And in fact, it was banned for a time in Alberta and Saskatchewan, but then they I guess because of public pressure to bring it back, it did come back with some restrictions.
And this issue is not over. There's a comment period. How do farmers ensure their voices are heard about this before the final decision is made?
The comment period runs until September 27th. And so if farmers were to Google Health Canada and strychnine, it would take them directly to a page where they can leave comments.
Well, thank you very much for telling us about this, Barb.
You're welcome, Ed.
Barb Glenn is the Western Producers Livestock Editor and Lethbridge Reporter. And in case you're wondering, before talking to Barb, I checked out the proper pronunciation for strychnine, and apparently one can say strychnine, strychnine, or strychnine. It's all allowed. Last week on this show, we heard from an agronomist about the International Clubroot Workshop in Edmonton. Grain News editor Leanne Minogue was at the conference and joins us now to give us her take on the event. Hello, Leanne, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Ed.
This was a pretty big gathering of many of the world's experts on clubroot. What were they saying?
Well, they said a lot of things. They talked about molecular biology, classifying pathogens, and some breeders were talking about their work on new types of resistant seed. But what the farmers in the room really heard from all these scientists was that there's no immediate solution coming down the pipeline. Almost every speaker at the podium used the exact words, there's no silver bullet.
That's too bad.
No kidding.
Yeah.
It was a little depressing, actually.
We spend a lot of time talking about clubroot in Alberta and Saskatchewan, and now in a number of places in Manitoba this summer and the last couple of years. What is the situation outside of our little piece of the world, though?
Clubroot is everywhere. It's causing trouble in Europe, in China, Japan. And it's not just canola, but any related crop. It's cabbage, mustard, broccoli, Chinese bok choy. So I talked to Wayne Trum, and he was at the conference, and he's a farmer on the SAS canola board. And that's what was really striking home with him. And Wayne told me, we think it's just started, but we're just the last to get it. So in some ways, that's not all bad news, because as you know, there's a conference full of international researchers looking for ways to fix our problem.
Yeah, I guess we could learn from elsewhere.
Exactly. And if they get a solution first, we can take advantage.
So what's the bottom line here for a farmer? What is the most actionable information that you heard that a farmer could take home and plug into their farm today?
Well, there was nothing new. There's some optimism about maybe using lime to increase your soil pH a little bit and decrease the amount of clubroot spores in your soil. That's not going to get rid of the problem. There's some people looking at fumigation, but that's going to be too expensive for a whole field. So for now, we just need to keep doing what we're doing, or in some cases, we need to start doing what we already know we should be doing. And those are just the basic agronomy things that we know. Only growing canola every 3 years at most, sanitizing equipment to get any clubroot spores off it before it gets in your field, and growing clubroot-resistant varieties if you think the disease is in your field. That's really all we've got.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Leanne.
Oh, thanks, Ed.
Leanne Minogue is editor of Grain News. Saskatoon's Regional Economic Development Authority brought in four leading-edge companies to Agriculture in Motion, the giant agriculture show held every July outside Saskatoon. One was IoTag, an Australian ag tech startup with some pretty neat electronic livestock technology. Grain News and Country Guide writer Lisa Gunther caught up with IoTag co-founder Vijay Viswanathan to learn about two of the products he was showcasing.
Tell us a little bit about IoTag.
Sure. So we are an agricultural technology startup out of Australia. We specialize in remote farm management solutions for extensive livestock farms. So cows, that is beef and dairy, as well as sheep, pig as well. So that's our focus.
And I understand you have a couple of specific technologies that you were showcasing here at Ag Emotion.
Yes. Two products, really. One is our locator GPS tracking collars, and the other are the trough watch sensors. The locator collars, it's literally just a GPS sensor box that's encased in like a collar we put on the neck of the cow. So what that then does is then the cow is just trackable instantly. You can know its location. Then the GPS actually pings out its location like every few times a day. to over long-range wireless to a base station on the farm, and through that it comes to the cloud, and we have a cloud platform. So the essentially the farmer can just open his tablet and load our web app, and he can see where his stock is. So that is the innovation. The TruffWatch sensors, that's an ultrasonic level sensor. So essentially you can track the level of either solid or liquid. So what that then does on a farm is you can track feed silo levels, you can track water tank levels, water trough levels. Again, same thing, that also functions on the long range wireless. So this combination of sensor on one end, long range wireless to bring it to the base station, and then cloud and cloud software, that's kind of our stack, that's how we do it. And there's a reason it kind of succeeds as well as it does in a setting like Australia, because the farms are large and there's not that many people, right? The population is fairly small. It's the same here, I understand. So there's not much cell phone reception. So all these sensors and technologies, like people talk about these things a lot. The reason they don't work on farm is there are unique challenges. There is no cell phone reception. The farm is like, I can't even get cell phone reception. Forget using some fancy software to locate my cows. But we've solved that with the long-range wireless part. Because for the long-range wireless, you don't have to pay anybody to transmit in the in that spectrum. You just buy the hardware. The radio on one side is sitting on a sensor, and it is able to communicate to this base station up to like 40 kilometers away. So what that then does is it allows you to collect data from farms like that, like really spread out, really disparate. Like nobody really touches that stuff. There is so much technology for like horticulture and row cropping and all that, but there's very little for livestock farms. So that's what we're after.
And so is there any particular reason you're looking at expanding into Western Canada other than kind of the distances and the limited number of people that we have out there?
Those were the two main ones, at least from the surface. We're like, oh, this place looks like there's plenty of agriculture, plenty of beef and dairy. So they must be facing the same problems. And I think we're starting to understand, yes, there are a lot of the same problems, then it's different as well. You guys have a long winter. So like, for example, water trough monitoring, they're like, temperature also is as critical to me as the level. So we don't have that in Australia because there's always water and it's liquid. But that's easy enough. We can put a temperature sensor in it. So there are probably things we would do to access this, to make the product more suited to this market. The other reason really is culture, and I've kind of discovered this recently. Saskatchewan, the people are very friendly, and I feel like they're open to new technologies and keen. I feel like the middle provinces kind of get left out of all the technology that's coming out. Let's say something's in Toronto, it really doesn't reach Saskatoon. So with the initiative Sreeda's doing and stuff, they fly people like us down. So I feel like it's a fantastic opportunity for us to say, hey, we will come in here and we will put our solutions to test and actually help you guys, because we help people like you halfway across the world. So why not?
Right. Anything else you want to add?
Not really. Thank you for the opportunity, and it's been amazing being here. So we're absolutely loving it, and we will be back, and we'll be here quite a lot, I think. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
No worries. Thanks.
That was Grey News and Country Guide reporter Lisa Gunther talking to IoTag co-founder Vijay Viswanathan. We might be in the early stages of a worldwide currency crisis. Right now, it's directly hitting Turkey, India, and Argentina, among others. But these things always affect the loonie. So to get a sense of the possible implications for farmers, I called David Derwin, a portfolio manager and investment advisor at PI Financial in Winnipeg.
You know, something like on the currency, I mean, in the short to medium term, any kind of weakness in the Canadian, let's put it this way, any kind of strength in the U.S. dollar and therefore some weakness in Canadian dollars is overall net a positive thing, right? Just from the export point of view of things. There have been some one-off cases where people are anticipating a big U.S. dollar purchase, you know, maybe equipment or something like that, where we've looked at some hedging strategies for that. But in general, you know, despite what we've seen here, the Canadian dollar, what, we're back to about 76 cents. And so from a longer-term point of view, it's kind of still in that 75 to 80 cent range. So, you know, nothing really. I think what more than anything, it might be a little bit anticipatory that if we do see some U.S. dollar strength and the Canadian dollar starts to get below 75 cents, 74, 73, then there could be an opportunity to protect some of those lower currency prices, protect basis a little bit. and approach it that way. But as it stands, to answer your question, no, it's not. Any outcome, I think, from this would be strong U.S. and weaker Canadian, and that's kind of a good thing.
Yeah, so if there was contagion and it spread to the Canadian dollar, which is obviously not an emerging market currency, but if there's that flight to quality and flight to safety with the U.S. dollar, it might give us some opportunities if it goes lower to lock in some pretty tasty low Canadian dollar prices if we're going to be making sales in the future.
Yeah, that's that's the majority of it. Just because of the net, we're always net exporters, right? So the low Canadian dollar is helpful. On the radar screen.
Have you seen these kind of emerging markets currency and debt problems? You know, if this does continue, if it doesn't just blow off in a few days, but if it does spread, and there's a lot of anxiety about that, does it tend to impact the Canadian dollar much, or do we stay aside from it because we're not facing the same sorts of situations that those emerging markets have?
Yeah, I would say yes, more so only because, you know, as much as the Turkish lira gets a lot of news, right, and it seems to be a big issue. I mean, yeah, Turkey's a decent-sized economy, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't have the exact figures, but it's not something that necessarily means that Canadian gets in trouble. I think more what happens is other countries where perhaps a lot of investment flows have gone into, there might be a reverse side of that a little bit more. Perhaps emerging market funds that would invest in currencies like or in assets in Indonesia, in Turkey, in South American countries, maybe you get a bit of people pulling money out just because it kind of gets spooky a little bit. But, you know, unless it's something dramatic like we saw back in 08 where everything got sold, you know, we could have a bit of an impact, and that's why if it does drop a couple pennies in the Canadian dollar, then, you know, that could be that opportunity to not necessarily lock in, but maybe we look at option strategies that give us, you know, some decent levels with a little bit more benefit if it weakens, but if it goes higher, at least we've got some protection on that.
Well, certainly a complex set of moving parts out there right now, and I guess we'll have to watch closely, even during harvest time. People will need to see if they're going to get those opportunities for a suddenly lower Canadian dollar, and I guess not ignore it for too long if it does happen.
Yeah, and you know, if anything, maybe it helps our domestic cash prices a little bit just because the currency's a little weaker. So it, if it was going up dramatically, obviously it would hurt it a bit. So, but at this point, it's not too dramatic, and we just look for some opportunities to get a little bit lower here.
That was David Derwin of PY Financial talking to me, and I'll be writing a column about this for the next edition of The Western Producer. The crop markets have been jolting around this summer, as they do many summers, as weather slams into them in bullish and bearish ways. Ashley Robinson of Commodity News Service joins me now to talk about what's affecting prices as we head into the final weeks of the growing season. Hi, Ashley, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hello, thanks for having me.
We've got lots of weather, and we just had a USDA WASDE report. What's making the markets move right now?
Well, of course, the weather and the USDA WASDE report, as you mentioned it. And then I know a lot of the time we've been talking about trade the last few months, but that's not moving things as much as it was before. So, yeah, with the canola market, contracts rose in value over the last week because we saw that really, really hot heat wave, which had us all really wanting to hang out in air conditioning over the last week. So that was putting a weather premium in the markets as it was drying out crops and putting crop progress a bit ahead of schedule than what we thought we would see because everything was so dry due to the hot weather. But then on Friday, we had some excitement when the USDA released their reports, and basically they didn't do anything that traders thought they were going to do. So that's put everything in a tailspin and sent the markets down. They pegged the soybean yields at a larger than expected 51.6 bushels per acre. And then they put the production at 4.6 billion bushels, which is higher than last year's 4.4 billion. Also, the corn numbers they came out with surprised everyone, too. They put that the corn harvest is going to be around 14.6 billion bushels, and that was higher than what traders were thinking it would be. And then they put stockpiles, of course, because we have seen so much stuff with the trade news. Those rose to 1.6 billion bushels, which compares to last month's forecast of 1.5 billion bushels. So that sent our corn and soybean markets down on Friday, but things have kind of started to stabilize over the last few days. Monday yesterday, which when you guys hear this podcast, that'll be a few days ago, but on Monday, things were still kind of being driven by those reports. But today, Tuesday, we're starting to see things stabilize, but they're definitely still surprised everyone. And the trade news isn't really driving the market right now. I was talking with a trader in Chicago last week, and he was saying kind of like they've just all got so used to all this craziness with Trump that nothing really surprises them anymore, the traders. So they've just kind of had everything priced in and aren't paying as much attention to the trade war news.
And the market did react to WASD, but it didn't react perhaps as much as if it had entirely accepted USDA's conclusions. Is that a sense you got, or am I seeing that wrong?
I think there always is. I know it's more here in Canada whenever the StatsCan reports come out. The traders are like, everything's wrong. But there could have been a bit of that playing in with the USDA and stuff, because there have been so many crop tours, of course, completed recently. And there is reports coming in offhand from farmers that sometimes traders don't completely believe what the government's saying when they release these reports.
These days, on top of weather and statistics, we almost always have to consider the trade wars. And just last week, another trade war might have started, a one-sided one launched by Saudi Arabia against Canada. That country is involved with Canadian agriculture in a number of ways. And I know you've been looking at how this present furor might affect the ag sector here. After a week of this drama, what do you think the impact might be?
Right now, I feel like things have started to quiet down, of course, but it's still ongoing as we still are seeing headlines about Saudi Arabia. But, of course, last week they banned buying barley and wheat from here in Canada. And as of right now, that doesn't have a huge effect on our market, because really they hardly buy anything from us. When you're looking back at grain exports, the last really large purchase they made for barley was in May 2017, and then for wheat it was back in 2015. And so this is mostly due to location. Saudi Arabia can get wheat and barley from other locations that are way closer to them for shipping, but this year that might not be the case. Of course, anytime we lose out on market access to anywhere in the world, that sucks. And we really don't want that to happen here for Canadian farmers. But this year, there could be, if this hadn't, this little spat hadn't happened with Saudi Arabia, we could have maybe seen some increased purchases from them, because we are seeing that drought in Europe right now, which is reducing their crop production numbers. And that is one of the places that Saudi Arabia has been buying their wheat and barley from. So we could have seen increased purchases due to that from Saudi Arabia. But if they're still going to not be impressed with us over the next while, that might not happen. And then, of course, the one thing that has been really lighting up the agriculture world in Canada in regards to the Saudi Arabia spat is G3. The former Canadian Wheat Board is mostly owned by the Saudis. So it's based here in Winnipeg, but the Saudi government owns the Saudi Agricultural and Livestock Investment Company, which is the majority owners of G3, and then also the American company Bunge owns some of the company. So last week, of course, we heard from Saudi Arabia. The government said that they're going to start selling off Canadian business assets. But as far as we know, G3 isn't up on the auction block just yet. There was a lot of different media sources contacted them last week, and according to the Winnipeg-based company, it's business as usual for them. But as we've been seeing more and more stuff go on with the Saudi Arabia little tiff between Canada and the country, if this continues on, that could possibly change. But for right now, G3 is just going to stay as it is.
Yeah, I imagine if they ever decided to sell out and give up their shiny, brand new everything that they've built, there might be a few buyers out there.
Yeah, definitely. I've been hearing there could be a lot of there, because of course they've expanded the infrastructure so much since they bought the Wheatboard and started G3. They have a beautiful new port that they're finishing up building out in Vancouver, and they've been building a lot of elevators. So there's just, they have an insane infrastructure across the country, and there'd definitely be some other foreign countries that would love to get their hands on that network in the Canadian agriculture scene here.
So going into harvest, what are you going to be watching most closely, the weather, statistics, or these trade wars?
Well, weather probably and statistics. As I said before, the trade wars are kind of becoming old news, although if we do see Canada starting up any more, ending up in any more tiffs like the Saudi Arabia case, I'll definitely be paying attention to that. But for right now, we're still just sitting around, and unless NAFTA suddenly, they're like, we got that done then, that's definitely, I'll be paying attention to that. But mostly weather and statistics, as I said before. Weather is always important any time of the year, but definitely right now as we're into harvest and everything. So we've been seeing, of course, I mentioned before, crops maturing ahead of schedule due to the hot, dry weather. And then, of course, also the statistics are important. In a few weeks, we're going to be seeing our updates from the Stats Can. They'll be coming out with the production report at the end of the month, and that'll be giving us some ideas on what yields are like. Of course, with Stats Can, they always complete their surveys weeks before the report comes out, so that always leads to a bit of hesitance with traders wanting to believe what's going on there. But still, that'll be really important. And then, of course, we also have our weekly crop reports coming out from the provinces that always give us an idea of what's going on. And then there's always the weekly crop progress reports from the USDA, too, that we pay attention to.
Thanks for coming on the show today, Ashley.
Thanks. Have a good day.
Ashley Robinson is a reporter with Commodity News Service. That's all for this week. Join us again next week for another edition of Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, and I wish you all well and to keep safe as we roll into harvest.
Today's program was brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Acceleron BioAg products harness the powerful technology of nature to release soil-bound nutrients, helping promote nutrient availability at the plant root. Accelerate crop performance with powerful bioenhancers aimed at promoting nutrient and water uptake and improved yield potential. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.